Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 4 of Retail Ramblings. So we've already had 3 episodes of fun, and what we'll do to begin with is just recap episode 3 and just go over what we touched on. So we'll start with our retail winners and losers that we had for episode 3. So I'll start with the winners. We first had Owens Corning and GAF Building Products based on the demand of asphalt shingles in North America, which is going to see those two organizations benefit enormously. And also Decium, after news was released that they were invested into by Estee Lauder, which is massive news for them.
Okay, and on the loser side of things, we had our usual winner, which is the Home Depot, but they had a really bizarre story happen to them, which kind of centered around some fails that they had around security. And then we also had Avon on the cosmetic side of things. They've had some recent turnover in senior management. That is a little bit concerning. And their shares have also gone down.
And what about on the retail roadmap, Marsha? What did we touch on last week?
So in the retail roadmap, we spoke about the trend of virtual reality. And we talked about two really interesting examples of where it's being used. So on the brand side, we talked about L'Oreal and their virtual reality room that they have in their headquarters in New York. And on the retailer side, we talked about how Walmart uses virtual reality to train their new employees.
Yeah, and it's a really, really interesting conversation that touches also on some themes that we explored in episode 2 about robotics in retail and how that money is going to be invested in something such as training with virtual reality. So if you haven't heard either of those two episodes, I strongly recommend going back and listening to both episode 2 and episode 3. And the final area that we touched on was the data dive, and we had a look at Amazon and their acquisition of Whole Foods and how that's going to relate to their accrual of data and what that's going to mean for the amount of data that Amazon has on hand. And another motivation that isn't necessarily straight on the surface with why Amazon actually purchased Whole Foods. Okay, so we're going to dive straight into the retail winners and losers for this particular episode, and I'll let Marsha take it away with Clorox. Marsha?
Sounds good, Chris. So Clorox is a brand that caught our attention this week, and it wasn't for something that they've done on the brand side of it, but it was actually on their employee side of things. So their CEO, Ben O'Dor, was actually ranked as the number one position in America's highest rated CEO in 2017, which is according to a poll by Glassdoor. He received a 99% approval rating from his staff after having served the company in the role since 2014. And this kind of rating is incredible. Like, if you take a look at Glassdoor, it's very rare that a CEO will get such a high approval rating. So he really must be doing something right. So he actually comes from Procter & Gamble. And in the poll, he was praised for his leadership qualities and his ability to invest in a culture of growth and career development. He originally joined Clorox to work on its laundry, home care, and international businesses. But he was also really instrumental in the company branching out into natural beauty with the purchase of Burt's Bees. Chris, did you know that Burt's Bees was under Clorox? I had no idea until now.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see that something such as, or a brand such as Burt's Bees falls under Clorox, considering that they're more in like the personal health and beauty and cosmetic space, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting, and it was really cool to kind of see those two worlds collide, the two worlds that we're super interested in here at Acuity.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll go from there, and we'll have a look at the losers for this week. So as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, the loser that we have this week on the home improvement side isn't necessarily one company, but rather it's every manufacturer in hardware, essentially, who's not manufactured in the United States. Now, I'm sure you're probably wondering why. So there's been a report that's come out from the National Hardware Retailers Association, which basically says or outlines the trend at the moment that we have in hardware, where both consumers and retailers are giving priority to the Made in America logo. So when I say the Made in America logo, I'm talking about anything that's basically made in America, and the consumer, both the consumer and retailer, pushing for brands that have been manufactured in the States. Now, there's some statistics I want to throw out from the report, Marsha, that we'll sort of go into a little bit more of a dive with, but we'll start on the retailer side. So 76% of retailers interviewed in this study done by the NHRA have said that they're increasing their Made in America brands in store. of those retailers interviewed, 79% are actually trying to promote them more heavily, which is really, really interesting to hear. Basically, this has come down to the fact that the retailers are having a perception that consumers are more inclined to spend money when it comes to a brand that is made in the United States as opposed to brands that are not. Now, this particular sentiment is actually echoed on the consumer side. So as part of this study, the consumers were interviewed as well. And 72% actually said they're willing to spend more money on brands that are made in America. But what was interesting is that 32% of consumers interviewed in this particular study said they're willing to spend at least 10% more, which is a huge figure.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I was amazed when I first saw it. And it shows that the retailers on the floor know exactly what's going on. They're more inclined to promote American-made products at the shelf and at the register, and they've noticed seeing consumers seeking out made in America products. So this falls to who our losers are for the week. So Marsha, I'm going to throw out some brand names. I want you to tell me I want you to guess, what country they come from. So okay. We'll start with Bosch. Do you know where Bosch is from?
That's a good question. I would have guessed American, but
no.
Now that they're a loser, let me guess China.
No, so Bosch is German. How about Makita and Ryobi? They're from the same country. I feel like the name's a little bit of a giveaway, but just have a guess. Come on.
I'm not sure.
Okay, so they're both from Japan. So they're our three big losers, we can say, in power tools, because somebody such as Stanley Black & Decker, particularly with DeWalt, is an American brand. So they're standing to win in this particular scenario, and Bosch, Makita, and Ryobi are in a little bit more trouble. Now, if we delve into a few other categories, Marsha, Dyson, do you know where Dyson's from?
I would assume somewhere in Europe.
Okay, as well. So they're British. And Hoover is American, their main competitor. So Hoover wins out on that one. Dyson is the loser. How about Fisher-Paykel?
Okay, let me throw out a random guess here. Is it Scotland?
No, so Fisher-Paykel is actually from New Zealand. So I don't like them either being Australian. But they're from over the ditch in Australia. And their main competitors is GE and Whirlpool. Again, stand to benefit from this report showing that consumers want more made in America. I'll go one more. And this is a little bit of a curveball, so I want you to just have a random guess. Husqvarna.
Husqvarna. Oh, I haven't even heard of the brand. I'm not doing very well here. Can you give me a hint?
They're in Europe. So pick a European country.
Let's go with Italy.
No, so they're from Sweden up north. And John Deere, their main competitor, is the American counterpart. So having used those lawnmowers before, they equal each other in quality. But again, American consumers are going to definitely be heading more towards the John Deere than what they are Husqvarna. Now, the reason that I brought all of this up, and we obviously want to talk about trends and see where retail is going, is Walmart, interestingly, has actually committed to investing $250 billion over 10 years to American-made companies. So that's a really, you know, interesting trend that goes along and reflects what these report findings have shown. As well as that, there's the interesting sort of problem that we have with brands that are made in America, or they're American brands but have been brought out by global conglomerates. So a great example of that is Milwaukee Tools. So Milwaukee Tools actually isn't an American brand, or they're not an American owned brand anymore. So they are manufactured in the United States, but they're actually owned by a conglomerate, who are located in Hong Kong. So it's a really, really interesting scenario for these brands that are made in America. As well as that, there's the question of quality and price, right, Marsha?
Yeah, so that's for sure.
So the price is obviously going to be increased when they're manufactured in the United States. You would assume the quality is increasing as well, but there are certain situations such as a power tool or a power drill where lithium ion batteries are not made in the United States.
Yeah.
All the expertise falls in Southeast Asia and East Asia, and therefore you can't manufacture these parts in the United States. So there's a lot to take in. Unfortunately, brands like Bosch, Makita, Dyson, LG, Fisher-Paykel are the losers, but the greater trend here is the really interesting thing for us, and something that's really going to continue to come out in retail as we move forward.
How does was really interesting. Chris, have you found the same sort of thing across other industries as well? Do you think in cosmetics people value American-made just as much as they do on do-it-yourself?
I think it's the perception of the brand as well, isn't it? So when it comes to something like that, you would imagine that European brands already have great... There's a brand association with Europe and it making great cosmetics,
yeah,
right? So although United States, in certain areas such as LA, New York, these are cosmetics hotbeds, places in Europe also have that prestige to them. So maybe it doesn't come through so much in cosmetics. You'd imagine that it'd come through more so in areas where the United States and industries where the United States is renowned. So housewares might be another good example. Baby and children would probably be another really good example where the United States has always excelled in manufacturing these products, and therefore consumers are more likely to look for the Made in America tag on these particular products. So we're going to jump across now to the cosmetic sides of things, and I'm going to let Marsha take it away with our cosmetics winner for the week.
Sounds good, Chris. So the winner for this week that I'm going to talk about is e.l.f. Cosmetics. So e.l.f. is a really cool brand in cosmetics. So their approach is kind of taking a luxury stance on cosmetics, but at an affordable price range. So they have a whole variety of products ranging all the way from creams to eyeshadows to lipsticks and everything in between. So the reason that it caught my attention for this episode is that their sales have actually increased by 20% this year. So after their initial public offering in September of 2016. And as part of this amazing growth, the brand has actually expanded to a number of retailers, including Target, Walmart, and Ulta Beauty. And it has recently also launched a number of standalone stores as well in select cities. So I thought that was incredible news to share. And another thing that's really interesting, what they're doing, so they're launching a new skincare collection, which is called Beauty Shield. And the products are ranging from sunscreen to various creams, and they protect your skin against the environmental factors. So not just the sun. So they're protecting your skin from pollutions and other irritants that can be found in the environment. And they're launching this online to start off with, which I'm usually a really big fan of. I think it's a really smart way to launch a new product, to really test out your pricing and to see if it resonates with consumers, and then to take it from there and invest into a brick and mortar presence as well. So just having looked at the packaging and the prices for this Beauty Shield line, I really do have a great feeling about it, and I think it's going to continue being a winner.
Yeah, and we're always harping on here about omnichannel, aren't we, Marsha? And this is a classic example of a company testing online, seeing how the product is received, and then extrapolating those findings to bricks and mortar. And that's something we're seeing more of, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, across all kinds of different industries, this seems to be a really big trend, and I don't see that changing.
Yeah, definitely. It's something we'll talk a little bit more about in detail in the retail roadmap. But before we do that, I do want to talk about the loser that we have this week for cosmetics. So our big loser is NARS Cosmetics. And the reason I have chosen NARS, and it's fairly large news, is that probably in a good move for the company in terms of increasing revenue is they've expanded to China. Now, one thing that everybody in cosmetics will know is that when you expand to China, it's actually mandatory by law to test on animals in China. Now, this has been a massive PR loss for NARS Cosmetics. And the reason is they've traditionally marketed themselves as a cruelty-free brand. Now, they've alienated their core consumers. They've received a massive amount of backlash on social media and online. There's many print publications. The ones that come to mind are BBC, CNBC, Cosmopolitan, who have really come out and been quite scathing on their attacks on NARS Cosmetics for deciding to make this move. Now, it poses some interesting questions. Yes, they're the loser, but again, as we did with the hardware side, we want to look at the trends behind this. Now, going into China and the Chinese cosmetics market is a $29 billion market. So
Wow. My
question, and I guess I want to pose this to you, Marsha, is what do you do as a brand? And you might not have the answer because I guess we're not consultants or beauty brands, but what do you do as a beauty brand when there's a $29 billion market and you essentially can't access it because of animal testing is mandatory in China? It's a really difficult position to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think, I mean, as any brand going into something like that, I think they need to weigh the pros and cons and and kind of decide from there. You really can't please everyone. And if the opportunity is there, then yeah, maybe it does make sense.
And it's such an enormous market as well. $29 billion is not, you know, a drop in the ocean. That is an enormous market, and it's continuing to grow at unprecedented paces, and we all know that. So NARS Cosmetics is a loser, and they're a loser more so for the PR disaster it's been for the brand, and this is obviously going to filter down to their, you know, their account teams and managing those key accounts in North America, because the North American consumer is going to be less inclined to pick up the product. But you know, maybe in the long term, they're going to stand to win by accessing that market. An interesting point to note is that there are some huge brands that do test in or that are extremely successful in China. So Shiseido, who is NARS' parent brand, have openly tested in China for numerous years. Estee Lauder, L'Oreal, they're all in the Chinese market, and therefore they're obligated by law to test on animals. So it is a super difficult situation. It's unfortunate that the situation exists, and it's unfortunate that NARS is our unlucky loser for this week.
Yeah, Chris, just a quick question there. So this PR backlash that they've received, has it been seen on the retailer side of things as well? What about the places that do carry NARS? Have they seen any of that backlash as well?
You would imagine so, and you'd imagine that it wouldn't be anything that had been necessarily direct. So there hasn't been an enormous amount of, say, social media backlash or any PR backlash, but you imagine that consumers will speak with their pockets, right? So consumers who have been loyal to the brand have been completely alienated, and you would imagine that if Sephora or Ulta is the main retail outlet, they're not going to be picking up NARS, and they're going to be searching for the competitors who are cruelty-free. And that is a pretty perilous situation that NARS is facing at the moment.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So we've gone through our winners and losers for the episode. We're going to jump across now to the retail roadmap. So if you are unsure, our retail roadmap looks at the trends that are recurring in the retail industry. And something that we like to keep a keen eye on, considering that retail is our area of expertise and something that really interests us. So this week we're going to be talking about bricks and mortar. Now, bricks and mortar and online are the buzzwords in retail at the moment. And with the, I guess, the impending death of department stores, it seems like online and online sales in general and online retailing is the vogue. But an interesting article that Forbes has come out with has actually discussed how bricks and mortar is really the way of the future. And if you look at store sales in 2017, $394 billion will come from online sales, but that's a drop in the ocean of $4 trillion of total retail sales. So what I want to talk about is the why, and also the repercussions of where this is going to go in the future. So there's a few reasons why bricks and mortar is still going to be super important moving forward in the future. The first reason that it is going to be important is that old retailers are going to clear out of a lot of these spaces, and a lot of the old definition of retail isn't going to be relevant anymore. So you're looking at department stores struggling significantly. You're looking at retailers who would never change and thought that department stores and that their retail model was the overarching model. And the reality of the situation is the old model of retail doesn't exist. The model of not caring about the customer, just giving the product straight direct to the customer without a focus on customer experience, without a focus on making sure that all your touch points are relevant, making sure that you have a social presence, making sure that you have an omni-channel strategy. Those are the overarching themes now that are extremely important. So we move across to new retailers and what new retailers are doing and why they're showing that bricks and mortar is still going to be important. You've got many retailers that have been extremely successful online. Amazon is the obvious example, but also companies like Alibaba and smaller ones like Warby Parker, a huge one who are as glasses manufacturer and retailer, Vistaprint as well, who is probably one of the biggest printing retailers in the world. They've all gone for a strategy to bricks and mortar. And the reason being is there are many benefits to having a bricks and mortar presence. So high conversion in store is a massive thing. Also, the whole experiential idea behind bricks and mortar. So people coming in store and touching products and smelling products and feeling products is why a lot of these online retailers have decided to open bricks and mortar stores. Marketing is another huge reason why brands are deciding to open bricks and mortar stores and understand the importance of having a field presence. And this begs the question, Marsha, and I want to kind of throw this out there. Where does this leave stores that are online primarily? So Wayfair is one that comes to mind immediately, and also eBay, but also the stores that have really failed to take advantage of online. So we're looking at companies like Lowe's and Costco, whose percentage of sales is really, really small online. Where does it stand for those two brands, or those brands in general, should I say?
And so I think there's different ways of looking at it. So I think like Wayfair, for example, their whole value proposition is that, you know, you can look through furniture online, you could pick something and it's going to be delivered, I believe, like the next business day. So I think there's a place for that in the market. And I think at some point they are going to go to brick and mortar, but right now I think they're doing great online.
Yeah.
With other retailers like Lowe's, for example, I don't think it's an option. Like, they need to step up their online presence if they want to have a chance at all to compete with Home Depot.
Yeah.
So I think it's a matter of looking at the competition that's out there and making a judgment call there.
And it also shows how important it is to have something such as retail analytics data, right? Because you need to make sure, omnichannel is the buzzword at the moment, but you need to make sure, yes, you can get all data from your online channel, and being able to track and measure and see how consumers make decisions online is quite simple. But to be completely in the dark when it comes to bricks and mortar is akin to shooting oneself in the foot, right? So you need to make sure that the way that this trend is going, that bricks and mortar is important, and then making sure that desire to innovate and use technology and leverage technology that is so prevalent in online also transfers across to bricks and mortar.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the big trend, innovation. And like, we see all these articles talking about the retail apocalypse, but it's like, as we've seen from what we just discussed here from this article, that's not the case at all. It's just that the industry is shifting and brick and mortar stores do need to be on their toes and to innovate and to change with what the consumer is asking for.
Exactly.
All right, so we'll be wrapping up the podcast with our data dive. And here we're going to talk about the use of data in retail and some data innovations. So what the trend that I want to talk about today is called the community-driven beauty. And there's a really cool platform that I came across called Volition, which is an online crowdsourcing platform that empowers real people to submit ideas for beauty products. And that basically loops the consumer in from the very beginning of product development. So with this platform, users are encouraged to submit their own ideas for beauty products, vote on other ideas, and then shop the products which were created by people just like them. So how this works is that the Volition innovators are partnered with top labs and chemists across the country to create their dream products, and they're actually involved in the development each step of the way. And only the most supported and the best products are actually made. So it's totally a crowdsourcing approach to it. It's nice. Almost like Kickstarter, but for the beauty industry specifically.
Crazy.
Yeah, I thought it was very cool. So what Volition is basically doing, they're using the power of community to create beauty products that are not only high quality and effective, but they're what the consumer truly wants. And I think this really falls into the trend of personalization that we talked about and just the overarching theme of brands and retailers really like catering their offering to consumers and making it as relevant as possible. So Chris, do you have any guesses where the Volition platform is going to be launched?
I'm going to take a wild guess here because we love Sephora, and I'm going to guess it's going to be Sephora.com.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Your guessing game is clearly a lot better than mine from before. Volition is actually launching on Sephora.com on August 8th, and then it's going to be rolled out into select stores in September. And we've talked about Sephora quite a bit on Retail Ramblings. And if you look back at some of those episodes, you'll see why this partnership makes perfect sense. I mean, Sephora is super passionate about community, and they have a deep appreciation for the power of engagement and the use of technology and really driving shoppers to their stores. So this partnership with Volition gives Sephora the ability to delve even further into their tech-savvy consumer psyche and to offer even more personalized experiences for its customers, which is a really strategic focus for the company at the present.
Yeah, and this goes back to exactly what we spoke about in the last segment, right? So bricks and mortar retail, Sephora is just going from strength to strength, right? And a lot of this comes down to the fact that no, bricks and mortar is not dead. Companies who don't innovate and have their finger on the pulse are the organizations that are dying. So kudos to Sephora and for organizations that are failing to understand this. They really need to pick up their game and really understand that bricks and mortar is not dead. Failing to innovate is dead.
Exactly.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of Retail Ramblings. I just want to recap very quickly what we've gone through today. So we've had a look again at our retail winners and losers, and we had Clorox on the DIY side, along with the loser of every brand that's not manufactured in the United States. So I'm not really going to go through them all again, but there was a fair few that we've gone through. On the cosmetic side, we had our winners as e.l.f. And our loser as NARS Cosmetics. From there, we jumped into our retail roadmap and had a look at brick and mortar stores and the relationship with online, omnichannel, and what that stands for the future. And to wrap it all up, Marsha went through a data dive and we had a little bit of a look at Volition and Sephora.com and where that's all going in terms of community engagement, driving product development. And at Retail Ramblings, we love feedback. So what we want to see you do is stop listening to our episodes and start reviewing. We want you to see you get down there on iTunes, on SoundCloud, any other channel that we've posted on, just jump on there, give us a quick review, say hello, and let us know what you think of our episodes. We want to make them better and make them as tailored as possible, and your feedback helps us do that. So get onto those platforms and start reviewing.